This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with my usual entry mate here on the program. She is retired jockey Christina McManigal, and we are positioned trackside at historic Saratoga Racecourse in Saratoga Springs, New York, and extending a very special welcome to everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM channels 206. Everybody tuning in worldwide on our website, on your smartphone or your tablet with our live streaming, horseracingradio.net. Want to remind you that each week a portion of the proceeds from Jock Talk are given back to the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. It is the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and we encourage everyone to support the PDJF and help those riders who have given our sport so much, and because of those injuries they sustained in the saddle, they are no longer able to do so. You can learn more about PDJF and make donations by going to pdjf.org. And Christina, as always, a very worthy cause.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope everyone that was in the area went to the jockey karaoke the other night.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was really neat to be over there and see that fundraiser and watch so many of the jockeys make fools of themselves, really. But that's what it's all about, and it's all for charity, so why not?
So it's okay.
Yeah, why not? Well, one of the jockeys that was at the jockey karaoke, and by the way, is very instrumental in helping the PDJF and helping to raise awareness, is the 32-year-old native of France, and he has recorded 2,100-plus winners in his career. So he is still going strong, and that number is going to increase. But his runners have earned more than $115 million in purses. Think about that. He won his first Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice Jockey in 2006, and he came back in 2009 with a second Eclipse Award as the nation's top rider. And by the way, he's also won 5 Breeders' Cup races, so he's pretty good. He's jockey Julien Leperoux, and he's with us for the hour here on Jock Talk this evening. Happy to have you on board, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, quite a resume.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been good so far.
Let's get to the important stuff. The heck with all the racing stuff.
Just
you're
going to
be
right
a dad in. Next month. Are
yeah,
you ready for that?
I can't wait for it. 7 more weeks.
Wow.
Little boy, very excited.
You should be. Are you ready to be a dad?
Well, I don't think you really can be ready until you actually have a baby, but you know, I'm very excited, gonna be very nervous, but I can't wait.
Now, you've been sending out some social media hashtags on Twitter that say hashtag baby Roo. Is that
yes.
what we're going with here? Hashtag baby Roo?
Yes, as of right now, yes. That's gonna be the hashtag.
So there'll be a lot of pictures and everything on social media when he comes?
I'm sure my wife will put a lot of pictures, yes.
Boy or a girl, by the way?
It's a boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what, how about the big question? Is this is he going to be a future jockey?
Well, I guess we'll see. I guess I will not be opposed to it, but I will definitely not push it either. So whatever he wants to do, he'll be fine with me.
What are you going to do if your wife, Shay, goes into labor on a day you're supposed to ride?
I don't know.
About that?
But I mean, hopefully it's going to be somewhere where I can be there as soon as possible, but I definitely will take off my mounts if I have to be there, yeah, for sure.
Have we already started preparations around the house, painting the room and everything?
Yeah, I painted the room, put the crib together. No, everything is good so far.
Did you actually do the painting yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm impressed. Blue, I hope, right?
Yeah, all blue.
Of course.
Now, you also have a dog. right? That is like your child, right?
So you started prepping
the dog for this?
Well, it's a pretty good dog. He's good with babies, but I'm sure he's going to be a little jealous at first. He's very needy and spoiled. So, you know, I think he'd be fine, yeah.
Does the dog have a hashtag?
No.
What are you most looking forward to about being a dad?
I love kids. I love being around kids. I got a little nephew is going to be 6 this year. Shay's family got a lot of kids too, so just to be around them is great. And now to have one of my own is like, you know, that's something I always wanted since not when I was a kid, but since we got married, we really wanted kids, so we're very excited. Yeah.
What's the scariest part of becoming a dad for the first time?
Well, I don't know yet, but I think for me as of right now, I think is after the hospital when we go home the first week or two, that's going to be a kind of scary. You know, we don't really know what we're doing yet, so we're just going to have to learn, and that's it.
Well, and how long have you and Shay been married?
It's going to be 3 years.
3 years.
In December.
Flew all the way to California to do it.
I heard.
This guy's got style.
Did I say so?
Well, let's go back to the beginning, Julian. I mentioned at the top of the show you're a native of France,
yes,
right? And I'm going to try and pronounce your hometown. Tell me if I totally butcher it. Okay. Is it Senlis?
Senlis.
Senlis.
Yes.
Senlis, France. Northern France.
Yes.
And the town, you know, it's funny. I went back and looked it up. It's a town with just a ton of history.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where I was born, but I grew up in Chantilly, which is only maybe a 15-minute drive, maybe. So it's not that far. But yeah, I mean, all around, like Chantilly, all around there is it's a lot of history, yeah, for sure.
Well, and Chantilly, of course, is just horse racing everywhere.
Yeah, it's I compare it to Lexington from France. You know, it's like, you know, training center everywhere, stables, the racetrack, the castle right behind the racetrack. So it's very beautiful, yeah.
And you come from a racing family, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, my dad was an assistant trainer in France. So I grew up around horses all my life.
What do you remember about the first time he took you to the racetrack?
Well, I usually actually went with him every year to Deauville. So I usually used to spend like the months of August in Deauville. So I used to spend the whole August with him, which I was great memories. His trainer won the French Oaks in 1991. So it was, you know, something special to be a part of it. And I mean, I just, you know, have a lot of good memories for me, yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite memory of watching him ride?
Actually, I never saw him watch him ride.
Okay.
You know, he was a retired jockey before, you know, I could remember. He rode flat races, and then he got too big, so he went to the jump racing, and then he just retired. He was, you know, he didn't want to do it again. So I never really saw him ride other than in the morning. But that's it, yeah.
Did you follow American racing during that time growing up?
I actually started in 2001. That was actually the first. Well, actually, I take that back. I was watching the Breeders' Cup before. But in 2001, that's when I saw my first Kentucky Derby on TV. So it was like very, very, very nice, yeah.
And you were hooked ever since?
Yeah, well, I was hooked before, but it's definitely something that at that time, we never saw that before in France, so it was very nice, yeah.
Did you ever imagine that you would be riding in that race?
Not at all. I mean, it's kind of funny, actually, to be a part of it now. It's kind of crazy when I think about it, but it's even better to be live there than to watch on TV, for sure.
Did your dad want you to be a jockey?
You know, not really. But, you know, when I was a kid, 13, 14, I was like kind of mad at my dad because I really wanted to do the jockey school. But looking at it now, I think he did the right thing. You know, I just finished high school, and getting my diploma and everything. And then after that, when I told him I really wanted still to be a jockey, you know, he pushed it and make sure I was going to do something I really wanted to do. Yeah.
So tell us about your first time on a horse. Do you remember that?
The first time I was 8 years old, and my cousin used to have a horse, so I went there and started riding with him. But then I really, really started to ride at 11. So I was like short jumpers and stuff. In my first race horse, I was like 16 or 17. And that made me actually like quit jumping, and I wanted, that's all I wanted to do is be on the race horse.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine that had to be somewhat of an interesting experience, your first race, when you go up against other jockeys and you're in the heat of the battle. What was that like?
Well, it was crazy, because actually I was here in Saratoga when my first ride. But it was an amazing experience, because, you know, it was for a connection that was good with me and didn't put me any pressure. And I was like, they basically just told me have fun and that was it. So it was like I got to race my first race without no pressure, and remembering my first race, because a lot of time is you get so much pressure and you break out of the gate and the race is done and you don't really like, okay, what happened? He went too fast, you know. But it was a fun first time. Yeah.
How many times do jockeys tell us, and Christina, you've told me the same thing about your first ride, that it's just a blur. Everything happens so quickly.
And I was going a mile and an eighth, I think, my first time out, and it was so fast.
How long was your race?
Mile and eight, too. Yeah. And
so does that give you a little more time to get settled in, or no?
Well, yeah, I guess, yeah. I mean, I guess you break from the gate, and you get time to, you know, to watch what's going on. You know, I think it might be the best thing, because if you go 5.8 or 5.5, it's like it goes so quick you have no chance to remember anything really. but it was a fun experience for me, and you know, being here in Saratoga was really amazing too.
Yeah, very special. And yeah. I didn't realize that you hadn't ridden in a competitive race in France.
Never rode in France. I got up horses in the morning, but that was it. Yeah.
So what brought you to the United States?
I came here, Saratoga again, for a week vacation, and I met with Patrick Biancon at that time, and I just wanted to come back for, you know, get the experience, learn the language. So my first thought was to come for a year and a half on a visa, and so Patrick helped me to get my visa, and then I was just, you know, after the year I wanted to stay more, so we did another visa, and now we're here. Yeah.
You mentioned learning the language. Did you speak any English when you came here?
I knew the basics, but I didn't really speak anything, so it was kind of I needed to learn everything, basically.
How difficult was that to just jump in headfirst kind of and not even really knowing?
Well, you know, when you got no choice, you have to. But I gotta say, like, the first 6 months I was in a country, I hang out with only French people, so my English was, I didn't learn anything. But then we switched from California to Kentucky, and that was no French people at all. So I definitely have to learn English at that time.
Have you learned Spanish yet?
A little bit. That's from Florida now.
Visiting with jockey Julien Leperoux, if you didn't recognize the accent, right here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Johnny V told us that he learned English by watching The Little Mermaid with Angel Cordero's daughter. How did you pick up on the language?
Well, actually, that's kind of a bit of the same. I had a French friend that had a daughter and was watching a lot of cartoons, so it was definitely a big help. But also just talking to people, you know, meeting people and really try to make an effort to speak with them, and that's it. You know, you gotta try. I mean, I'm sure at that time they probably didn't understand half of what I was saying, but you know, they were very nice. They teach me, and that was good.
How was that transition, moving to the United States, and then you mentioned moving to Lexington, Kentucky, and moving around with that gypsy type lifestyle? How was that for you?
Well, I loved it. You know, I was young and I was just wanting to travel anyway, so it was great to move around, and I get to see a lot of places. And you know, I'm actually talking to people from here in Saratoga, and they were like, you know, you moved to California, Kentucky, all those places, and those people never actually moved anywhere in America. So it's like, feel blessed to be able to go and travel, for sure.
Why Patrick Biancone when you first came here?
Well, I had a friend that was working for him. Actually, Patrick knew me when I was a little kid also. So we had a little, you know, connection there. And when I came in for vacation, I came and he saw me and definitely tried to help me. So that was very nice, you know, very, very, very good for me.
Is he the one who you learned so much about race riding from?
Definitely. That's probably teach me everything I know.
Really?
You know, when I came here, I was galloping horses in France for maybe a year, maybe less than a year. So I was very green when I came here, and at first he just teach me everything, and I learned a lot of that for sure.
Did you have other riders that you idolized when you were growing up and when you first came to the States?
Well, like French racing, you know, I always look after Olivier Pellier, which at that time he was younger and on top of his game. I mean, he's still on top, but he's getting older, that's it.
Yeah.
But he was somebody I was following around all the time. Christophe Soumillon, I get to see him like start his career when he was apprentice. So he was, you know, somebody that I was looking to. And here in the state, I knew about Gary Stevens and Jerry Bailey. So that's the two I was looking to. Yeah.
As you're mentioning those names, the one thing that was going through my mind was, now, Julian, you are one of them, right? And those are your peers. Those were your idols. Now they're your peers. That has to be just an incredible thing for you.
Oh, yeah, it was. It's just amazing. I mean, you know, like being able to just meet them in person and then ride with them, it's just incredible. Yeah.
Were you nervous the first time you met them?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Well, from Olivier and Christophe in France, I kind of knew them a little bit. But when I first met Gary Stevens and Jerry Bailey, it was like, oh, my God, like, wow. And Gary actually was a rider for Patrick, so that I got to meet him really good, walking horses with him in the morning. So actually when I came here for my first race, I was in his corner, and he, you know, he let me borrow his saddle and everything. So it was cool, yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah. What other jockeys helped you along the way when you first came here and you were just getting started?
Well, the first one was Gary Stevens, for sure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after that, you know, the jockeys room is a very competitive room where everybody wants to win. But in the same time, all the jockeys try to help the bug rider. So it's a very nice thing where, you know, everybody try to help you, for sure.
Doesn't a lot of that have to do with safety?
Definitely.
Well?
I mean, it's a lot about safety, and you know, we feel like for us and for every, I mean, for the bug boy and for us, we have to teach something. Yeah.
Do you help out the excuse me, the younger riders today?
Oh, definitely. If I can, you know, it's something I try to.
How do you do it?
Well, it's just like watching the replays after the races. If they did something I see in the race that they could have done different, safety-wise, I make sure I point it to them, and that's it, you know. After, you know, you got some guys that want to listen and learn, and some don't want to. So it's like, it depends the person, I guess.
do you spend a lot of time watching replays of your races?
Well, yeah. I mean, every race I'm riding, I watch a replay for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
What are you looking for when you're watching?
Everything. I mean, it's like something I could have done different, or some, you know, where the winner was, or if I won the race, how I did it. I mean, it's a whole thing where I watch it. Yeah.
How about handicapping? How do you prep for a race?
Well, I don't really handicap as a betting standpoint. I just more handicap it how the race gonna, I feel like gonna go. So, you know, who is the speed, who to follow, you know, all these kind of thing. But yeah, not the betting stuff. No.
I've always wondered, when you're aboard a horse that you've never ridden before,
mm-hmm.
what's that preparation like, and is it different than a horse that you know?
Yes. Well, if you ran before, you try to watch replays and see how it is. You know, obviously try to see if the trainer is going to tell you something about it too. But if you knew the horse, if you rode him before, usually you don't really have to do all this work here.
You talk about the trainer telling you things. One thing that happens in our sport is the jockeys get out to the paddock and they meet with the trainer. Sometimes the trainers give directions, sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked the Ortiz brothers this on the program last week, and they had a little fun with it. What is the craziest set of instructions that you've ever received from a trainer?
Well, I had a lot. No, I mean, trainers are different, you know, in every trainer is different. Some, like you said, don't tell you anything, say good luck. I like when a trainer tell you not too much, but a little bit if he has to be, like, something bad about a horse or something. I like to know about it.
If he has any bad habits.
Yeah, bad habits. But, you know, I had a funny story, actually, one time at Keeneland. I ran for, I don't even remember the trainer's name, but that was the first time I rode for him, and I got to the paddock, and he tells me, say, go see my wife. She's going to tell you what to do. I say, okay. So I go see his wife. I say, how are you? Nice to meet you. And she hand me a piece of paper, and she said, there you go. So I'm like a little surprised. So I look at the paper, and that was all the instruction in French. Because they thought I didn't speak English at all. So I'm like, oh, okay, thank you. So I thought that was funny. Yeah.
What's the wildest horse that you've ever been aboard?
I don't know.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, when you get a leg up and the horse just is so hard to handle, that, I'm sure that's happened a time or two.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I don't. I can't give you a name, but yeah. It definitely happened for sure, yeah.
Julien Leperoux joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And by the way, Julien, I am staying with Larry Colmus, NBC mm-hmm. announcer here at Saratoga. We're roommates here in Saratoga, and he told me that I pronounce Leperoux incorrectly.
Yeah.
He said the proper pronunciation is Leperoux.
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 Yeah.
All right. That's
I'm
right.
Not
yeah,
even going to try it.
That's yes. Okay. I'm used to it now.
He said, you make sure that you tell him, I told you that you're
yeah, yeah,
wrong.
Yeah.
And most people do.
He practiced a lot, though.
Hey, I'm a little bit used to McManigle, but that's even yeah. more difficult.
Yeah.
Let's go back to those early days. You mentioned your first winter coming here at Saratoga. That was back, I guess, 2005, right?
Yes.
And then in 2006, you finished the Saratoga meet with 28 wins. That mm-hmm. was the most in track history by an apprentice.
Yeah.
Think about that. This is the oldest track in America,
right.
And you held that record.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said before, I had a lot of support at the time. You know, Patrick Biancone got a full stable for me to ride, and a lot of the trainers owner put me on horses, so... you know, I was very fortunate as an apprentice to have all those people behind me. And you know, that was great, yeah.
Who were some of the other trainers you rode for during that time?
Oh, it's been a while now. Yeah, you make me feel old now.
No.
Come on, he's only been
no, I mean,
for
10
years.
That was a lot. I mean, I don't remember exactly, but it was... Yeah, it's been a lot of people.
With 28 wins, I'm sure many, many people.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I can remember watching Julien we live in Kentucky, of course, we're based in Lexington, and I can remember watching you just dominate at Turfway Park and at Churchill Downs, and I remember the great battles that you used to have for leading rider titles with Rafael Bejarano.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, because Rafael was just kind of coming onto the scene at that point, too.
Yeah, he was good. We had a great fight for the title all the time, keen on Churchill, so that was fun, yeah.
He's another one that's come a long way with learning English and really being able to speak the language. I caught up with him a couple of weeks ago when we were in Del Mar.
Yeah.
And great, great kid. I mean, I really like Rafael.
Yeah, I met him actually before I started riding. And you right, definitely learned a lot in English now.
Well, that 2006 season was also the year that you were awarded your first Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice. You won more than 400 races that year, which led all jockeys in the United States. So it was a tremendous run. Tell me about hearing your name called at the Eclipse Awards and getting that vote.
I was very nervous. I speak English, but my English was not that good at that time either. So I was very nervous to just get in front of people and talk. So, but it was a special moment. My family was here. My mom, my sister was here. So it was a fun night. It was great, yeah.
To have your family there with you, that had to be...
Yeah, they flew from France, and they were there, so that was special, yeah.
Came back in 2009 with another Eclipse Award. Where are the Eclipse Awards now?
They're at home. They're at home in Kentucky.
In the living room? Where are they?
Where are they? I'm going to have to ask my wife.
He looks back at Shay.
They are in there.
You do know where they are, right?
Yeah, they're at home.
Do you have a room just dedicated to memorabilia and everything?
Not yet. We just got the house actually last year, so we're definitely going to have like a little room set up for it, yeah.
Steve Asmussen joined me on Trainer Talk last week, and he told me that his mom calls it her ego room, where she has pictures of the kids and all their accomplishments. So you're going to have to create an ego room in the
house. That's going to be in a basement or something.
All right, Julian Leperu with us here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. We're going to get to a short commercial break. We'll be back to talk about so many other memorable moments in his career. By the way, 5 Breeders' Cup wins. We have to touch on those. We'll do it in the second half of the show. Stay with us. It's Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Pena, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update presented by JockeyDraft.com. First, let's head to the Spa where the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Javier Castellano, continued his winning ways and led North America in earnings with $1,206,172. Leading North America in wins and earnings, Castellano won the Quick Call Stakes aboard Ready for Rye and the Grade 1 Whitney Stakes aboard Honor Code. For the week, Castellano finished with 10 wins, 5 seconds, and 6 thirds. Now, let's stay at the Spa where Irad Ortiz Jr. had a week worth mentioning. Ortiz led North America in wins with 13, which helped put him in a tie with John Velasquez for the most wins for the Saratoga meet. Since then, Ortiz has won 3 races on Monday to put him in the lead over Velasquez. Ortiz won 3 stakes races last week, including the Grade 1 Test Stakes aboard Cavorting. Ortiz finished the week by winning 33% and coming in the money on 50% of his mounts. Next, let's head to Canterbury Park, where Dean Butler and Leandro Gonsalves are neck and neck for the leading rider title. Butler had 2 stakes wins in the week, including the Minnesota Derby aboard Hold for More. Gonsalves had an impressive week highlighted by a win in the Minnesota Oaks aboard Sue Appeal. For the week, Gonsalves had a win percentage of 36% and finished in the money on 68% of his mounts. Prairie Meadows concluded their 2015 Thoroughbred meet by crowning Ramon Vasquez as their leading rider by an astounding 30 wins. Vasquez capped off the meet by winning the Iowa Breeders' Oaks and the Donna Reed Stakes. Vasquez finished the week with 12 wins, 3 seconds, and 2 thirds for a win percentage of 43% and an in-the-money percentage of 61%. Finally, let's head to the West Coast, where Rafael Bejarano continued to extend his lead in the jockey standings at Del Mar. Bejarano had 6 wins, 6 seconds, and 3 thirds from 26 mounts. He currently leads Tyler Bays for first place by just 3 victories. For all the latest happenings in the jockey world, go to JockeyTalk360.com or follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update presented by JockeyDraft.com, where you can play daily fantasy contests using your own roster of jockeys. If you haven't checked it out already, sign up on Saturday, August 15th for a free practice game where you can win a limited edition photo of Zenyatta signed by Mike Smith.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
On the far side, Forever Together, Visit. Suddenly it's wide open. Visit's getting a beautiful run through at the rail. And look at Visit in the pink cap. He's just bolted through on the inside. Wait a While is in there, halfway to heaven. Coming home late for Corey. Mara Locano, suddenly half a dozen can win it. Wait a While gets the lead. Visit down at the rail on the outside. Forever Together. And now the long shot, Seeley Hill. Forever Together. Forever Together. Forever Together has won a thriller. Huge run from the long shot, Seeley Hill, and Wait a While was right there in third.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Christina McManigal, continuing our visit with jockey Julien Leperu on the program here this evening. And you just heard that clip, Forever Together, winning the 2008 Filly & Mare Turf. Not the first of Julien's 5 Breeders' Cup wins, but it was a very special one for him in that particular year, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment, but do want to remind you that you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to get a podcast of all of our Jock Talk shows, all of our trainer talk shows, and virtually every program we do. You can go back and listen at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes as well. And don't forget, coming up after this program here this evening, night number 2 of the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale. Our exclusive coverage can be heard on Sirius 93. We will take you gavel to gavel beginning at 7 o'clock Eastern time. So after we finish up here, switch over to Sirius 93 and follow us all night long as we are live from the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale right here in Saratoga Springs. And that sale, always gangbusters.
Oh, my God. I'm so sad I have to leave today.
Yeah, by the way, Triple Crown winner, American Pharoah, sold at that very same sale.
Good history there.
Yeah, good history there. Yeah, it's a great sale. So make sure you join us coming up. Sirius 93, 7 o'clock Eastern. Julien, I mentioned Forever Together, and that's a name I know very, very special to you and to your career.
Yes, she was a special mare. You know, she, when I rode her first in the Diana in Saratoga again, so it's like she won it very easy, very nicely. And then the Breeders' Cup, she was a lot of fun, yeah.
How about before her, 2007? I'm looking at my notes. What a year 2007 was for you.
I mean, first Breeders' Cup, now. It was very, you know, like right now, pouring rain, and I mean, we just come from flying last and win the race. That was a special day too, you know, in first Breeders' Cup, and that was great, yeah.
Yeah, that was at Monmouth. That was the very first Breeders' Cup that we had ever broadcast here on the network as well. So
yeah,
special
yeah.
for us. And you mentioned pouring down rain. It was just a deluge that day.
Yes, it is. I mean, that was something that I never saw it again, but it was crazy, but it's a Breeders' Cup, so it's still fun.
What's it like riding in those types of conditions? Is it difficult?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's something that it was new for everybody, really, because the amount of goggles we needed to wear, you know, I remember wearing 6 pairs of goggles for a 6 furlong race, which usually you wear, you know, 4 it's a lot for a 6 furlong race, and end up after the race having no goggles, so it was like, it was just crazy how much goggles you were going through, and so it was very difficult, yeah.
Well, and I remember from riding, the more goggles you wear, the less effective your peripheral vision is. You have all these
yeah.
stacks of goggles on, so to have 6 pairs on, that's quite a lot to deal with right there.
It's quite a bit, and it wasn't really enough, really, to be honest. So it was difficult.
Well, it's not just the rain. You know, obviously ridden in northern Kentucky in the wintertime
yeah.
at Turfway, right? And I've always said, I think that if you're going to ride up there in the wintertime, you have to have a couple of screws loose. No offense, but look, I mean, there's some nights when it gets really cold, and then you're going 35 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour on a horse, that mm-hmm. wind chill has to just chill you, doesn't
it's it? It's very, very cold, for sure. You know, you do get used to it, but the first couple of nights where it gets really cold, it's awful, yeah, for sure.
How about the first time you went out there in the cold? Were you like, forget about this? I'm going back to California.
Oh yeah, the first week I was like, I can't do that. And you know, Patrick at that time was like, no, you have to stay here. I'm like, okay.
I wouldn't even get out of bed. Like, forget it. I'm gonna go do something else. Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, so many top moments in the career of jockey Julien Leparoux, and including a day in 2008 when you rode 7 winners on a single card at Churchill Downs, and that tied a 24-year-old record set by Hall of Famer Pat Day. He did it back in 1984. 7 winners in one program.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, my friend.
Yeah, I rode 9 that day, and I got beat the last one. I was finishing second by maybe a head, so I was actually mad at myself because I got beat the last race. But it was, you know, sometimes you cannot explain how it happens. It just, everything goes for you, and so everything you make, any decision you make is the right one. And that day it was like that. I just every race was perfect.
A lot of athletes talk about being in the zone, right?
Yep.
Is that what that means? Are you
yeah.
in the zone?
Yeah, you're in the zone. You focus, really focus the whole day. And you know, when you have the horse and a little bit of luck, it's fun, yeah.
Tell us how that picks up your confidence level, how you just go out there and all of a sudden you're just king of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, you go there, you win one, then they win the second one, say, well, I got a good day. Then you win the third one, it's like, well, that's a great day. And then it just keep on going, and you're like, okay, well, it's good. Just do it again then, you know, that's fine.
I'd imagine you start to feel like you can't lose, right?
Exactly, and that's why I think I was, like, very disappointed, because the last race I actually lost and finished second, and I was like, man, how did I lose this race, you know? It's like, but it was yeah, incredible, yeah.
Did Pat Day reach out to you to congratulate you or anything?
He came after that, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was you know, it's something like, you know, I was not making fun, but I was looking at it when he did it. I was 1 year old, so it was kind of funny to do it after that, yeah.
Let's go back to Forever Together for just a moment mm-hmm. here, because that obviously the same year that you were aboard Forever Together in that Philly Amer turf, you told me during the commercial break that horses like that, you almost feel like you can make a mistake and they're still going to win.
Yeah, it's, you know, they were like her and Informed Decision, like I told you, it was like they were so good that you could make a little mistake and they were still going to give their best and win the race, you know. So I remember in foundation one time I rode a Keeneland, and even after the race I was like, I rode a terrible race, but and I still win the race, but I was like, she won the race. No, definitely not from my ride, but she definitely was the best filly, and that was it.
Well, and Forever Together was on the turf. Do you find that you prefer horses on the turf?
Well, you know, it's like everything else. You know, it's like when you win racing on the turf all the time, I guess people say you're a tough rider, which is, it's fine. I mean, I love to ride on the turf for sure. But, you know, at that time I was riding a lot of European horses, and they obviously ran on the grass and from behind, so that's how they picture me how to ride. And like I say, it's fine because I ride very, very good horses from then, yeah.
Yeah, every jockey has their own style, right? Angel Cordero Jr., very, very aggressive. Other jockeys are like Eddie Delahousse, he's more finesse, right? Drop out, make that wide move, and come running at the end. How would you describe Julien Leperoux's riding style?
I mean, I don't know. I guess everybody said tough from behind. I mean, I guess, yeah, that's what I would say. But, you know, it's a lot about horses, which one you're riding. So it's, you know, like a couple of years ago when I was riding a lot of for Steve Asmussen, I was riding the two-year-old 5'8", you know, and we still win because that's how it is. The trainer, you know, they were ready to run 5'8", and you know they break sharp all the time almost, and they win.
What's the key to getting a horse to break sharp out of the gate?
Well, you know, most of it is the horse. It's not really the jockey.
I think,
yeah, most of it is it's the horse how he breaks, and then you make sure the jockey, all he has to do is make sure you're not on his mouth, just kind of let him go. And ask him to go the first couple of jump, but you know, if a horse don't break, the jockey can do nothing about it. You know, that's something that the horse got to go from the get. Yeah.
Well, you talk about riding styles, and obviously you ride the race according to how the horse's running style is made for. But I know people I've talked to who would describe Julien Leperoux would say you have very good hands with the horse. You have finesse, and that's how you communicate with the horse. Mm-hmm. You're very in tune with the horse. How would you describe that communication that goes on?
I think I'm just very like patient and very calm, and I think I try to relax my horse as much as possible. So that's something I learned too from my old days, you know, from the short jumpers, really. That's something I learned from it, and that was it.
In 2012, you decided to make a move back out to California. You moved your tack there.
Yeah.
In large part because of Shay, your wife, and you were married in December of 2012. Was that an adjustment going back out there from the East Coast?
It was, but it was a decision, a personal decision, really. It was not really something that I was really planning on doing. It was a year that was special to us as a family, and I'm definitely happy I did it, and we enjoyed it for sure. Yeah.
What's different about riding races on the West Coast than here on the East?
Well, you know, it's just something that, you know, you know, I basically came to a brand new circuit where, you know, trainers, they knew me, but I never really rode for anybody. So it's like something starting all over again, basically. But it was fun time. You know, I have nothing bad to say about California. I really enjoy being on the West Coast, racing wise too. And, you know, I just really wanted to come back on the East Coast where, you know, my whole career was before. So that's why I came back here after that.
A little bit nicer weather than Turfway Park, yes?
The weather in California is, you can't complain about that, that's for sure.
One of the trainers that you rode for in California was your father-in-law, Mike mm-hmm. Mitchell, who passed away, sadly, earlier this year, lost a long battle. And obviously it's very difficult on you and on Shay and the entire family, but is it difficult to stay focused on riding races when you go through something like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something, you know, I mean, like everybody in life, you know, when you got something happening like this for anybody, it's something you have to... you have to live with, but it's something you still have to focus on everything you have to do. So it's not easy, but like I said, I really personally really enjoy my year in California, and I think, you know, in 10, 20 years from now, looking back at it, I definitely think it's going to be something I'll be really proud of doing, and very happy, yeah, for sure.
What exactly was the deciding factor other than your career, and was it difficult for Shea to move out east?
Well, the factor was that, you know, we knew Mike was very sick, and you know, being, you know, Shea being on the East Coast is tough, you know, when you got your dad. And I went through it, you know, when my dad was sick too, when actually when I came to America in 2003, and he passed away 3 months after I came here. So, you know, I went through it already myself. So, you know, I knew how difficult it was. So, you know, the decision was, you know, spend time, the most time you can with the family. It's something very important to me. And that's why we moved back there. And, we had, you know, a great year, and it was fun. Yeah.
Your wife, Shea, can really sing. She's done several national anthems at different racetracks and venues around the country. What's that like for you to sit there and watch her belt it out the way she does?
It gives me goosebumps for sure. No, she's very talented. I love to listen to her. You know, I went to see her shows too a couple of times when we were in California, so I get to see that. And, you know, it was fun to see her do her thing. And, and you know, really, that was the only place in California she could do it. So it's one thing that I will be, you know, remembering my year there and seeing her do her thing. That was fun, yeah.
Yeah, she has a beautiful voice. And as we started the show talking about the PDJF Jockey Karaoke fundraiser here in Saratoga last week, and Dwayne Lucas was one of the judges. And after Julian came out and sang for his very first number, Wayne had some great advice, and I, as a matter of fact, I thought it was the line of the night, where he said, okay, I know you're expecting a child next month, Julian. That's great. Congratulations, but here's some parenting advice. And actually, it was Todd Pletcher who said it to him.
Yeah.
He said, here's some parenting advice. Let Shea handle all of the lullaby singing.
Yeah, I think that's a good advice here for sure.
Julian Leperu here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Julian, when you came back east in 2013, you were reunited with your longtime friend and agent, Steve Bass. Tell me about that.
Well, we've been together, you know, the whole time, but that year when I went to California. So, you know, when I decided to go to California, I told him, and, you know, it's a circuit you have to have an agent from there that knew already everybody. So, and he understood that. So, you know, he for sure, he was like, well, if you decide to come back, make sure you give me a call. So that's the first thing I did when I knew I was, you know, coming back. I just called him and said, listen, I'm going to be back. If you are available, you know, make sure you let me know. So, and he was, so that was great.
Julian, you also, to rewind a little bit, not only did you win the Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice, but you also won the Eclipse Award for Outstanding Jockey for 2009. And tell us what that feeling was like to not only win as an apprentice, but then to prove yourself as a journeyman.
It was an incredible year. You know, it was, you know, talk about like being in the zone. It was like, I feel like the whole year I couldn't do anything wrong, you know, and I rode great horses, and everything came together the whole year. And it was kind of crazy because you know, always are riding horses, good horses, and they always end up for some reason in the same race. And that year, everything went perfect. Like, I got one for each races, and that was it. So it was very fun, and, you know, it was like a very blessed year for sure. Yeah.
Was that the same year you were nominated for an ESPY Award?
Yes. But, you know, usually the ESPY Award is won by the Kentucky Derby winning jockey. So it's like, you know, I was nominated without you know, expecting to win it anyway. But
did you go to the ESPY Awards? Or
I no? didn't go. No, I didn't go. I was it was July, so I was probably in Saratoga before the meet, so I didn't fly there.
That was also the year you've won 5 Breeders' Cup races. That year you won 3 of them, and you were the second jockey in history behind Garrett Gomez to win 3 in 1 year. That's an incredible feat to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, like I told you before, everything went perfect, and I remember coming to the Breeders' Cup, and I had one horse in each race, and they you know, they all got a good chance to win it. So, you know, got 3 of them. And, you know, talking about horses that I was never as confident to win a Breeders' Cup than in fourth decision. I don't know why. I just, in my head, I couldn't lose this race. And so I won first with She Be Wild. And then I was going with him from decision, so I was like, well, I'm going to win 2 Breeders' Cups this year. That's going to be awesome, you know? So, and she did win. And then Furthest Land the next day for Mike Maker and Ken Ramsey. You know, a little bit of a surprise, but, it's been running great the whole year, so we knew he's going to be competitive. So that was good.
How many times have you gone back and watched the replays of those Breeders' Cup races?
I mean, a lot. I mean, it's something, you know, when I was a kid, I was watching Breeders' Cup, and something is like, I remember having parties at my house with my dad, and we were betting on like €2 or whatever on horse racing against each other, like who's going to finish first or whatever. So it was like something every year we had something to do with Breeders' Cup in France, with friends and family and everything. So to be part of it was something incredible. The first time I rode Breeders' Cup, and then winning them was even better, yeah, for sure.
When you have a party and you have people over, do you just pop in the CD and say, hey, check this out?
No, I don't do that.
Hello, everybody.
He has it streaming, like, no. You know, throughout the house.
I mean, I might do that.
Right. Hey, if I won 5 Breeders' Cup races, trust me, there would be wind pictures everywhere. There would be videos everywhere.
I have picture, for sure, but I don't show the video to everybody.
Well, Julian, we started the show by talking about a portion of the proceeds from this program going back to benefit PDJF, and you are a huge supporter. You are a huge spokesperson for the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and we like to get the word out any way we can, but you could probably tell the story even better than we can. Why is it so important?
Well, first of all, it's something that it could happen to any jockeys. So, you know, big-time jockeys or the smaller jockeys, a bug boy that just started. I mean, it could happen to anybody. So, you know, to us, it's a charity that don't get any money unless we raised it. So it's something we got to get together and try to raise money for them and support them, because, like you said before, they gave a lot to the sport, and unfortunately they can't do it anymore. But, you know, if you ask all of them, you know, even when they got hurt, the first question is probably, when can I get back on a horse? And unfortunately, they could not ask that question at that time, because they knew they're going to be done. They could not race. And it's got something I can't imagine going through it, you know, as a personal thing. I knew it could happen, but, you know, we don't think about it. You know, we don't think about that at all. But we have to try to help them for sure. And, you know, we here in Saratoga, first of all, is a perfect place to do it, because it's a lot of people, a lot of fans, and they've been supporting a lot of, you know, a lot. I mean, the jockey karaoke was amazing. I mean, a lot of people show up, and like you say, we can't sing at all, but we're still doing it and having fun, and you know, people make fun of us, it's fine. You know, it's okay. It's not our job to be singers, but we still have fun, and, you know, put on some wigs or sunglasses and costume or whatever, and just do it and have fun.
You said you don't think about the potential of what could happen, right? And every rider has told me that. We just don't think about it. But how do you're so close to it, working with all these disabled riders. How do you put that out of your mind?
Well, you have to, because I think, first of all, if you think about it, I don't think you will go ahead and race. You know, I don't think so. You know, it's something that we all know about it. We all know that, you know, it's a sport. It's not like if you're going to get hurt, it's when. You know, that's what they say. So we all know we're going to get hurt at some point, and that's it. You know, we don't want to think about it, but we know it could happen any time. I mean, I'm talking to you today, and maybe I'll get hurt this afternoon, but I don't try to, you know, I don't try to think about it. I just go ahead and do my job and ride racing.
Jude Feld, who hosts a lot of the different programs with me here on the network, he has a picture in his living room, and the picture is a phenomenal shot. Might have even won an Eclipse Award. It was the picture of you going over the inside rail at Keeneland, and he caught you in midair. The photographer caught you in midair.
Yep.
What on earth was going through your mind when you were going over that rail?
Well, actually, you know, I was something I didn't even like think about the fall. Really, I didn't really care because I didn't get hurt that time. I was very lucky. But I was going for leading rider at Keeneland, and it makes me mad because I could have win that race, and I could have win, I could have win the title by myself. But because of it, it was the last day of the meet too, and. But I still tie Rafael for leading rider. But you know, it was looking at it back, you know, looking at the picture, it was incredible. And I got very, very lucky, very blessed. I didn't get hurt. So that was, it was good, yeah.
He can't tell you what he was thinking on it.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah, I can only imagine.
It goes too fast, though. You can't even, like, think about it. Really, it's just happening, you know, you're on the ground, that's it. So it's like it goes very, very fast. You don't really have time to think too much.
Only a couple minutes left here, Julian, before we have to wrap up this visit. Really enjoyed hearing your story. But what things, when you look back on your career, what are the things that you are most proud of to this point?
Well, I mean, you know, winning races, titles, it's all good and it's all fun and, you know, it's part of the game and I love it. I love that part. I think what I'm very proud of is when I go back home and I see, you know, my friends or my family from long time that I haven't seen for years. And they all tell me how, like, I haven't changed. Like, even all the success I had in the past, I never changed. And I think I'm very proud of that because I don't want to, that's something, like, I want to remember where I come from, you know, my family, my friends. And you know, we are very blessed, you know, we in a sport that we can, you know, have a lot of things if you do good. And you know, it's very important to just remember where you come from.
Julian, I think everyone notices that about you, the class and the humbleness you have about you. And I'm going to ask you maybe a kind of silly question, but are you superstitious at all?
I am a little bit. I'm not crazy about it, but I am a little bit, yes.
Like, what's something
what's your number one superstition?
Oh, it's just, I don't know. It's like if I wear a pants or a T-shirt that I win a lot of races, I try to wear it as much as possible or something. But, it's, you know, I think I do, like, without really knowing, I think I do have, like, a routine every day. So that I do every day, but that's it.
Well, Julian, as I mentioned, it's been an absolute delight. And you are a class act. You're a great ambassador for the sport. And I know... personally, I've gotten to know you a little bit over the past couple of years, and it's been one of the true pleasures of what I've done here on the network. So
thanks,
brother.
Thank
I appreciate it, and fun to hear your story.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It was fun.
Look where we are. Who we're talking to. This is fantastic.
Very cool. Julian, awesome. Appreciate it, my friend. Thanks so much, and safe travels out there.
Thank you very much.
All right, Julian Leperu here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. If you missed any portion of the show, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our Jock Talk shows. And Christina, as always, been a lot of fun here tonight.
It's been so much fun to learn Julian's story, and I hope everyone enjoyed it as much as I did.
We are not done yet. Go to Sirius Channel 93. Night number two of the Fasig Tipton Sale coming up right now, 7 Eastern, with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network. For Lee Delapina, for Christine McManigal, I'm Mike Pena. So long.